hope everybody got enough caffeine and sugar to get going for our afternoon session. Today, in this session, we have three talks on search trees and search structures and searching. And the third talk in the session is going to be given by a video presentation. Unfortunately, the speaker could not make it. But the first two talks are speakers are here in person. So let's welcome our first speaker, Trevor Brown from University of Waterloo, and he's going to talk about his work on interpolation search.
All right, thank you. So today I'm going to talk to you about non-blocking interpolation search trees with doubly logarithmic running time. And this is joint work with Dan Alistar and Alexander Prokopek. Okay, let me paint a little bit of a background picture for you here. So in this work, we want fast concurrent data structures. Why might you want these? Well, to implement, you know, better database indexes or to serve as the in-memory component of a durable key value store, you know, data management things. And so our target workload is perhaps unsurprisingly inspired heavily by big data. So we are sort of interested in large data sets, high search volumes, high concurrency, and ordered set data structures are especially desirable in this space. So we'd like data structures that offer not just the traditional insert delete search, but at least have the capacity to offer like a range search. And we're going to be working in the asynchronous shared memory model, and I'm going to describe to you, of course, a non-blocking data structure. What does non-blocking mean? It means there's always some thread that can make progress, even if some threads can halt and stop taking steps forever at arbitrary points in their execution. Okay, so what this means is typically we can't use locks in a non-blocking algorithm because you could imagine I acquire a lock and then I halt and I never release the lock and I could easily block all threads so that no one can ever make progress again. Okay, so there are a lot of existing solutions to this problem. There are a lot of concurrent ordered sets that offer logarithmic time searches and updates in the worst case. And this worst case log n complexity is sort of related in some sense to like a lower bound on the complexity of comparison-based sorting. Because if you can implement an ordered set data structure that uses comparisons only without introspecting on the actual bits of keys to implement faster than log n time searches, inserts, and deletes, you could do searching and break this n log n lower bound. So if we want to do better than this log n complexity, we kind of have to attack like the average case. And there are a lot of techniques in the sequential setting, very elegant results, that do attack the average case successfully by doing things like exploiting properties of the distribution of input. And unfortunately, there hasn't been a whole lot of work along those lines in the concurrent setting. With one notable exception, the skip try by Rhoda Moshman and Nir Shavit. This is something that managed to get search times that are doubly logarithmic in the size of the key universe. So not the size of the data structure, the size of the universe of all keys that could possibly be inserted. And more recently, we've had kind of renewed interest in exploiting properties of the input distribution, or perhaps learning properties of the input distribution and exploiting those for performance. So we'll see an example of this a little bit later in the session when we see X-index. This line of work, unfortunately, doesn't have any complexity guarantees. And the earlier work in particular was limited to read-only workloads. So in this work, we're interested in taking a bit more of a systematic approach. So what we want to do is we're aiming to take some of these elegant sequential results and lift them into the concurrent setting so that we can exploit them to get really high-performance ordered sets that exploit, you know, modern multiprocessors. And this turns out to be non-trivial but doable as we come up with the first practical concurrent design of a distribution-aware search tree. We call this the interpolation search tree. And this is actually guaranteed to perform well for a large class of input distributions. And you might think, well, is this just a theoretical result? Does doubly logarithmic access time actually mean anything? Well, it turns out we actually outperform the state of the art for search trees in a lot of different workloads, many of which are quite realistic. And along the way, to get this good performance, we actually had to come up with a new collaborative rebuilding algorithm that we think might be applicable to some other data structures, you know, resizing hash tables, or perhaps rebuilding search trees that have balance criteria that are so strict that there aren't really any known efficient incremental ways of rebalancing. So things like, you know, Van Amdeboes trees and so on. Okay, so let me talk to you a little bit about interpolation search. So what is interpolation search? Well, if we know something about the input distribution, then why don't we just predict the location of a key and jump right there? Well, I mean, we might guess wrong. Okay, if we predict wrong, you end up at some key that's not what you're looking for, or you look at the key there, and you decide how to prune your search range appropriately and recurse. So let me show you an example of that happening. So here is an interpolation search on an array of 10 keys. We're looking for key 400. The minimum key is 17. The max is 490. Let's do linear interpolation. Okay, we'll do linear interpolation for the rest of this talk. So 400 is 84.5% of the way from 17 to 490. And let's just look at the 84.5th percentile array slot, so array slot 8. Okay, that takes us actually almost right to where we need to get to prove to ourselves that key 400 doesn't exist in this sorted array. So this interpolation search worked really well in this case, but did I just doctor this case to work really well? Well, okay, you might think that this would only work well in, if you have a uniform input distribution, uniform keys. But it turns out that this actually works well for a large class of distributions. Linear interpolation actually works well for a large class of input distributions. And these have been named in the literature smooth key distributions. Okay, what's a smooth distribution? It's a rather technical definition. I don't want to get into the details, but I want to give you at least some intuitive idea of what it means. So you can think of it, roughly speaking, as there's some bound on the slope of the distribution function. Okay. Now, there doesn't have to be a bound. It's a larger class of distributions than that, but that gives you some intuition. So these distributions are well studied in the sequential setting. For a background on this, you can take a look at Melkorn and Sakalidis. So we have interpolation search. How do we turn that into a tree? So, well, here's our data structure. We're going to have inner nodes that are fat nodes. They have lots of keys. If you have k keys, you're going to have k plus one pointers in an inner node. And then we're going to have leaves, single nodes that have one key and empty nodes that have zero keys. And this is going to be an external tree. If you haven't seen one before, that just means all of the keys that are semantically in the set or map that's represented by the tree are stored in the leaves. They're stored in single nodes. So what are in the inner nodes? Well, the inner nodes also contain keys, but they're sort of dummy routing keys that aren't necessarily in the set. They're in the data structure just to direct searches to the appropriate leaf. Okay, so we search with interpolation search at each node of the tree to find the next child pointer to follow. And we follow that and we repeat this until we end up at a leaf, and then we insert and delete at the leaves. And eventually the data structure is going to get very unbalanced and we have to rebuild it. We're going to periodically rebuild entire subtrees, which sounds really inefficient, to maintain the desired shape. So what's the desired shape? Well, we can define an ideal interpolation search tree. So consider a tree containing n keys. Here's an ideal interpolation search tree. The root node should contain order square root of n keys. That's a lot of keys. Each child of the root should contain order fourth root of n keys. Each grandchild should contain order eighth root of n keys, and so on. And if you have a tree of this structure, your height is doubly logarithmic in n. And when we rebuild a subtree, this is what we create. The ideal interpolation search tree, or an ideal interpolation search tree, containing all of the old keys, just structured in this nice way. Okay, so how do we take this data structure, which so far I've pretty much just described as sequential data structure, how do I make this concurrent? I'm going to show you how to insert and delete keys, and for a moment, let me pretend that there's no rebuilding, and then I'll explain to you how we add rebuilding to this. Okay, so suppose I want to insert 19 in this interpolation search tree. I'm going to do an interpolation search of the root. That tells me to follow the leftmost pointer. Then I'm going to do an interpolation search at the next node. That tells me to follow the middle pointer. I end up at this target location here. This is an empty node. How do I insert in an empty node? We actually don't modify single or empty nodes in place. We replace them with a new copy. I create a new copy of the node containing 19. And then I use a compare and swap, a CAS, which hopefully you guys all know what that is, to replace atomically this old empty node with a new single node. Okay, so what if I end up inserting somewhere that's not empty? So if I try to insert 13, I'm going to end up at this target location. This is a single node, not an empty node. So I can't just replace this with a new single node. What I'm going to do is I'm going to replace this with a new inner node and two new single nodes. So these new single nodes, these contain the key that existed before, 15, the new key I'm inserting, 13, and then I now need an inner node to link these together and some dummy routing key to direct searches to the appropriate leaf. So I just take the larger of those two keys. I swap this triple in place of the single node using a compare and swap atomically. Okay. How do I delete? Suppose I want to delete 15. I search for 15, I end up at this target location. I atomically replace this single node with a new empty node using compare and swap. That's it, I'm done. Here's the insert and delete. So this should suggest to you that the nuance of this algorithm is going to be in the rebuilding, because it certainly wasn't in the insert and delete. Okay, so how do we rebuild? Well, we want to answer these questions, when and how should we rebuild? Let's start with when. So what we're going to do is, consider a subtree that we last rebuilt at time t. At that time, suppose it contained n keys. We're going to rebuild that subtree as soon as there have been n over 4 more inserts or deletes in that subtree since time t. So we're going to do that for every subtree in the entire tree. We're going to preserve this property. So this is a procedure that sort of comes from the sequential setting. This is how you do this in the sequential setting to maintain an interpolation search tree so it's close enough to the desired shape so that your doubly logarithmic access times are still guaranteed. We had no idea whether this would continue to hold in the concurrent setting now that we have concurrent insertions and deletions alongside rebuilding. It turns out it does. I wouldn't be here if it didn't. So here's a result that we managed to lift into the concurrent setting. That talks about searches, so let mu be a smooth probability density. The expected search time in a mu random interpolation search tree containing n keys is order log log n, there's our beautiful doubly logarithmic term that we like, plus p. Okay, so p is the number of threads that are currently modifying the data structure. So if there are no modifications in progress, that term is zero, and we really get log log n time. If there are 1,000 operations in progress that are all updates, we might have a really bad depth bound. Okay, now, that's a very pessimistic bound. And this P is kind of ubiquitous. It shows up in basically all concurrent amortized analysis or expected analysis of concurrent data structures that you see. It's kind of hard to get rid of. We think we might have some ideas for how to get rid of this in the proof. Anyway, at least right now, this term is here. And there's not much I can do about it for now. So we have a second theorem because we want to know something about our updates, not just our searches. So this basically says the amortized expected total cost of a sequence of n mu random insertions and uniformly random deletions to an initially empty tree is the number of operations times log log n plus p. So we're getting sort of our doubly logarithmic time plus p. It's just an amortized complexity. Okay. So we have our doubly logarithmic access times modulo this unfortunate contention term, which maybe we can get rid of in future. Okay, so if we can maintain that property, that we sort of rebuild atomically subtrees that have had too many inserts and deletes happen in them in a timely fashion, then we can get these desired results. How do we do that? Well, we're going to maintain exact counters at each node except the root. The root will have an approximate scalable counter. What are these counters going to count? Well, the counter at a node will count the number of inserts and deletes that have happened in that subtree since the last time that subtree was rebuilt, or a larger subtree containing it was rebuilt. Okay, this might sound really inefficient. Turns out it's not. And then we're going to atomically replace any subtree that's over this n over 4 or whatever update threshold with a new subtree of ideal shape. And the way we're going to check which subtrees need rebuilding is inserts and deletes as they traverse towards a leaf, they're going to check these counters at each node that they visit. Okay, so how do we do this subtree rebuilding atomically? So here's a subtree that needs rebuilding. Suppose an insert or delete notices that this subtree needs rebuilding. What it's going to do is, it's going to create a special rebuilding node with a pass-through pointer to the old subtree. And it's going to use compare and swap to insert this in between the subtree that needs rebuilding and its parent. Okay, so now if searches run across this rebuilding node, they're actually just going to ignore the rebuilding and answer their queries in the old subtree. And if inserts or deletes come across this rebuilding node, they're going to become helpers. Okay, what do I mean by helpers? Well, they're actually going to perform the same sequence of steps that the insert or delete that initiated this rebuilding is going to perform. And here's that sequence of steps. So first, we're going to traverse the old subtree in depth-first order, and we're going to mark every inner node that we come across, and we're going to count all of the keys in all the subtrees. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, each inner node is augmented with a status field that has 3 bits. There's a started bit that says whether our traversal has started at that node, a traversal of that subtree has started. There's a finished bit saying whether the traversal of that subtree is finished. And if it's finished, there's a count that's filled in to say how many keys are actually in that subtree. So our procedure starts. We do a compare and swap on this to set the started bit of the root of our subtree. And then we recurse in the leftmost subtree of that. We do a compare and swap to set the started bit in that node. And then there are no more inner nodes in that subtree. So we just count the number of keys in that subtree. And then we cast the finished bit and key count. And we continue to do this recursively all throughout the whole traversal until at the end we wind up with all of the nodes marked as started and finished, and their counts are all set. And my claim to you here is that this old subtree is locked down, it'll never change again. Okay, I'll explain how we modify inserts and deletes to guarantee that. But suppose for a moment that's true. So the next step is each helper, completely ignorant of what the other helpers are doing, independently of the other helpers, they're going to compete to traverse this whole subtree, create a new ideal copy of this subtree. It's a sequential procedure for building a new ideal subtree. And then they're going to compete to cast this pointer to replace that rebuilding node with their new subtree. So one helper is going to succeed, all the other helpers are going to fail. They're going to have to garbage collect their subtrees that they finished building or were partway through building. So it seems super inefficient, right? You also have to be a little bit careful with garbage collection, because you have to kind of garbage collect the old subtree and all of the sort of failed subtrees, subtree buildings. And doing that efficiently turns out to be really, really important to get good performance out of this algorithm. Okay, but how do we synchronize between updates and rebuilding? Because we don't want like updates to be modifying parts of the tree that are being rebuilt. So the idea is we want any modifications to the pointers, the child pointers, of nodes that have their started bit set to fail. So if a node has a started bit set, we should fail to update it. Okay, we accomplish this with a special synchronization primitive called double compare single swap, DCSS. So this is essentially a CAS that succeeds if not one, but two memory addresses contain their expected values. I'm not assuming special hardware here. This is something we're going to implement in software efficiently from single word CAS. So once we have this primitive, it's actually fairly straightforward. We replace the cast step in an insert and the cast step in a delete with a DCSS that does the same thing as that cast, but it'll additionally fail if the started bit of the node that it's modifying is set. Okay, and if we fail, we restart our operation from scratch. We haven't made any changes to the data structure. Okay, so that turns out to be a correct algorithm for, you know, inserting, deleting, searching, and rebuilding, but there's a big problem, and I've sort of hinted at it, right? This turns out to be a huge performance bottleneck, this rebuilding, when we rebuild the entire tree, which happens fairly often in an update-heavy workload. And if you think about why, well, the helpers are competing to mark and count with the same depth-first search traversal order, and they're competing to build their own copies of the new subtree and cast them in. So the helping is essentially sequential, and actually, in order to get good performance out of this tree, we had to come up with a fast collaborative rebuilding algorithm. So I'll sketch it at a very high level here. So the mark and count traversal is adaptively parallelized at each level of the tree. So at each node, helpers kind of optimistically reserve subtrees to recurse on. And of course, the nuance is doing that so that it remains non-blocking, even if threads halt. And then after that mark and count, we create a new subtree root. And that subtree root, it contains all null pointers to begin with. And it sort of works like a lock-free work queue, where each null pointer represents a job, like a subtree building job. So threads kind of optimistically try to reserve subtree building jobs and build subtrees in parallel. And then again, doing that in a lock-free way is what's hard. And we also had to parallelize the garbage collection of the old subtree in order to get good performance. Okay, so let me highlight an experiment for you really quick, and then I'll end. So we have a big 192-thread Intel system with four sockets. Here's a synthetic benchmark. 30-second time trials, N threads access the same tree, uniform key distribution. Yuck, I know, uniform keys. Don't worry, we tried other key distributions as well. Okay, so there are 10-plus leading search trees. I'm going to show you the fastest four here so the graphs aren't cluttered. We have our interpolation search tree. We have an ABL tree with optimistic concurrency control, the leading unbalanced lock-free BST, and the leading lock-free B-tree variant. These are actually quite highly tuned data structures. Here's an ideal case for us. 100% searches, billion keys. Cool, 150 million searches a second. And we do really well. Okay, that's an ideal case for us. Here's a slightly less ideal case. This is 40% updates. Now, still a billion keys, so this is actually quite good for us. Our doubly logarithmic access times can pay off because it's such a big key set. But of course, I'm only going to show you the good, you know, highlights for my talk, right? Okay, you might wonder why this is faster. Why is this faster than the other data structures? Well, it comes down to last level cache misses. So you can see the number of last level cache misses per data structure operation is quite a bit lower for our data structure than the others, even this other guy with fat nodes. And this is for an all search workload that I'm showing you on a billion keys, but this remains true for the more update heavy workloads until you get to really update heavy workloads on small trees. And you might also wonder, how effective is this collaborative rebuilding? How much did I really need this collaborative rebuilding? Well, here's a graph that shows for a whole bunch of different update rates and tree sizes what the difference is between the sequential rebuilding variant of the algorithm and the collaborative rebuilding variant of the algorithm. And going to the right is better here, so you can see it makes quite a big difference. Okay, so with that, I will conclude. I'll just say there are extensive experiments in the paper that I'm not talking about here, so if you're interested in seeing that it's not a research toy, take a look at that. And I'll abuse my last 5 seconds here to say, if anyone has a spare ticket for the excursion tonight, can I have it? Thank you very much.